We're going to not take a break and try to move on very quickly to our discussion with Serena Ulibarri about... are you there, by the way?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Good. Welcome. Sorry we couldn't get to talking to you sooner, but it was pretty intense discussion of Project Jupiter, which is a controversy down here that maybe you'll write fiction about. But for our listeners, I said earlier you write solar punk, which is a less dystopian view of our future, given climate craziness. You write and edit fiction. How would you define solar punk, first of all, for folks who have not heard it?
Sure. Solar punk is a creative movement that focuses on imagining better futures, futures that are more sustainable, more equitable. And I'm a writer, so I do this by writing science fiction stories about futures that are, like you said, less dystopian. They're not necessarily utopian. Everything's not great. We're still dealing with climate change and environmental issues, so there's always going to be, you know, those controversial issues coming up in the stories. But I'm looking at, you know, stories that take into account things like what you've been talking about, and trying to imagine futures where the environment is taken into consideration, where the impact on people, you know, is where these big projects are more balanced between nature and technology, more balanced between corporate interests and actual human impact. So, like I said, I'm a writer. I do this through writing. There are also artists and musicians and all kinds of other creatives that are doing this. And it's just a big, it's just a small piece of the larger environmental movement that's trying to imagine the future that we want to move into.
Yeah, it seems like you're trying to, I don't know, maybe put a little bit of a softer edge on it. Is that fair to say? Because it does, I mean, after a while, when you see all the dystopian stuff, it kind of starts to feel a little bit helpless. So I don't know. Is that part of the motivation?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely aimed at sort of reducing climate anxiety and empowering people to feel like they have some options to move forward into. I wouldn't necessarily say it's putting a softer edge on it per se, because that might imply that we're just kind of pretending, oh, everything is going to work out in the end. And I think solar punk is much more active than that. But what it's doing is taking the focus off of all the negative and all the things that are going wrong, and just shifting that focus onto what is going right or what could be going right. What could we do? So, you know, you see in the news all of the negatives about climate. There's actually a lot of work being done, a lot of really good work being done in regenerative agriculture and in renewable energies and in rewilding and all kinds of these projects that are happening right now and are, you know, working to move us toward better futures, but we don't hear so much about those. We hear about the negative things. And so by shifting the focus onto what is going right, it can empower us to think about what else we could do to shift things in that better direction.
How did you get into this particular genre?
Yeah, so it's been around for about 10, 12 years. I think I came across it in about 2014, 2015. Now, it's got roots that go way back because, like I said, it is part of the larger environmental movement. So there are books by authors like Kim Stanley Robinson, Ursula K. Le Guin, Starhawk, things like that that were published in the 80s, 90s that really are doing the same type of futuristic visioning that we're doing in the solar punk movement. But the term itself is pretty new, and it was started in the mid 2010s. I came across it through a call for submissions for a short story anthology, and when I came across the term, I just realized that was what I had been missing in my writing and in my reading. It was just a label that gave me something to focus on and to realize that's the kind of stories I want to write. That's the kind of work I want to do in the world. That's the kind of future I want to strive for.
And can you talk a little bit about the reading that you have coming up here in Las Cruces?
Sure. I'm going to be at the Rio Grande Theater on next Wednesday. And the topic of my talk is just storytelling for storytelling is a strategy for alleviating climate change and empowering people toward positive climate action. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what solarpunk is in more depth and what kind of stories we tell and what kind of visions we can imagine with these tools. And then I'm going to talk about what some of those tools are, and we'll do a little group project or a little interactive project to imagine ways that we could take these principles of solarpunk, the better, sustainable, equitable futures, and how we can apply that to our own communities and imagine just a different narrative than the sort of mainstream doom and gloom narrative that we're so saturated with.
In terms of what you see around you happening now, what's one or two of the good news pieces? What do you see that's looking good?
Yeah, I think there's a lot. So one that I have been involved with up here in Albuquerque is a project around the Candelaria Nature Preserve. So this was a farm right in the heart of Albuquerque. It's real close to the Rio Grande State Park, and it was a farm. And when the original owners passed away, it went into the ownership of the city. And it just kind of sat vacant for a while, and there were sharecroppers using it. Eventually, the city realized that the way the land was being used was killing off all the pollinators in the area, and it was compacting the soil, and there was just nothing good coming from the piece of land. But when the original owners passed away and moved it to the city, their intent was that it became a nature preserve. So after many years of it, not doing that, now the work is being done to actually reshape that land into a nature preserve. And it's a joint effort between the city of Albuquerque and a conservation group called Rio Grande Returns and community volunteers. And it's a really cool project. I've been out there a number of times to actually, work the land, and mostly what we're trying to do is take out the plants that aren't meant to be there, all the invasive species like tumbleweed and Johnson grass and kochia and things like that, remove those and replant the native plants that are going to support the ecosystem. And just in the couple of years that I have been I've been involved with this project, I have seen a vast transformation of the area. We're seeing a whole lot more pollinators and wildlife, birds, all of that. And it's something that, anyone who has, a couple free hours on a Friday morning can go out there and participate in and actually get their hands in the dirt and help the land, come back to some sense of balance.
Yeah. So you're actually combining your writing with your activism and getting out and putting all that together. I'm always curious when I talk to writers about process. Are you one of those who carves out time every day, or are you one of those that waits until the inspiration hits you and flies with it that way?
Yeah, that's a good question. I try to carve out time every day. I do have a full-time job as well, which makes it a little bit challenging, but I do try to carve out time every day because the way that I look at it is kind of the same way that I look at climate activism. It's a little bit at a time on a consistent basis can make a big difference. And so that's how I write as well. It's, a little bit every day. I've accomplished quite a lot with that strategy.
That makes sense.
Solarpunk is not so well known. I mean, I'm a writer and reader, and I had not heard the term until I was talking to a mutual friend about having you on. Am I missing something? How well known is it, and what can we do to make it more well known?
Yeah, it is fairly niche. Like I said, the term itself has only been around for 10, 12 years, and the term came kind of from other punk genres that you might be more familiar with, like steampunk and cyberpunk. That's, you know, we're taking that trend, which steampunk is like an alternate history of the Victorian era that's focused on coal and clockwork and, you know, those kinds of things. Cyberpunk is really focused on computers and information technologies, like Blade Runner and The Matrix and those kinds of 80s, 90s visions of a dystopian future. And solarpunk is kind of taking that dystopian vision and looking at the inverse of that. So that's part of the reason that we use the term, you know, punk, because we're in that lineage of these other punk genres. But also, it's something that is very grassroots and very community-focused. And so one of the reasons that a lot of people haven't heard of solarpunk is because the big publishers out of New York are not using the term. There are some books published that we have claimed as solarpunk or that the authors consider solarpunk, but that you'll never see it in the marketing materials. And most of the solarpunk fiction that's been published has been small press. So it's been these, like, you know, it's like the indie record labels, right? They're smaller outfits that are run by just a few people. A lot of them are short stories instead of full novels, because these are thought experiments, and short stories make a really good opportunity to just kind of explore an idea briefly. So a lot of it is, like I said, kind of grassroots and short story and small press, and it's not something, it's something that's coming, you know, from the bottom up, not from the top down.
For listeners who might want to explore a little further, I know you edit, I think you edit one, but what would be the magazines that, you know, if I'm just sitting out there and I'm saying, hey, that sounds kind of interesting and I want to read some solar punk, where would I go?
There is a lot available online, a lot of short stories available online. So there is a magazine called Solarpunk Magazine, and they've published quite a few good stories. There's a project that I was involved with that was run by Grist Magazine, which is a fantastic environmental news magazine. They did a whole climate fiction series, and it's called Imagine 2200. And we did this for 4 years. I was involved with the selection of the stories, and there are a whole, so if you go, if you just Google Imagine 2200, you'll find the four different collections that Grist published of these short stories, and they are incredible.
And that's Grist, G-R-I-S-T, yep. Like the Grist. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will, I don't know about others, but I will subscribe. Do you ever think, or how do you respond to somebody who might criticize you this way, but do you ever worry that cyberpunk, by putting a rosier spin on things, as it were, might reduce some people's energy for creating the kind of change we need?
Sure, it's certainly a risk. Like I said earlier, you know, solarpunk, if you just kind of imagine, oh, everything's going to be okay and it's all going to work out somehow, sure, that could reduce your impulse toward action. But that hasn't been my experience with people who have discovered solarpunk, either as writers or as readers or just as consumers of whatever creative output. I think it's actually kind of the other way around oftentimes. There have even been scientific studies about climate fiction and how when it's focused on the negative and when it's focused on the dystopian, that's what causes people to shut down sometimes. Sometimes it spurs people to action, but oftentimes climate change is just such a huge, huge issue that it's easy to feel hopeless in the face of it. It's easy to feel like individual action cannot do anything. And what solarpunk focuses on is not necessarily individual action, but collective action. And that can be really empowering to realize you don't have to do this all alone. You can do this as part of your community. And so what I've seen from people who discover solarpunk is that it actually empowers them. It doesn't make it seem like, I don't have to do anything. It actually gives them ideas for what they can do.
And you're going to be talking next Wednesday at Rio Grande Theater, 7 p.m., right?
That's right.
Anything else? We're almost out of time, but anything else you want to share with us that will tell folks a little more about your upcoming talk?
The only other thing that I'll say is that in a solar punk future, there is no room for big corporate data centers that don't do it.
Well, thank you. I can tell you were listening to our earlier discussion. I certainly have concerns. My first reaction was to hope they were going to insist on a lot of solar energy. It doesn't seem as if they are contractually doing that, so I'm pretty concerned.
I think there are ways that we can incorporate technology in more sustainable ways, and you know that's what we need to be looking at.
Well, looking forward to your talk next week, 7 p.m. Rio Grande Theater. We've been talking with Serena Ulibarri. I hope I said your name right. And she is a writer, editor, in Albuquerque, and specifically in the genre cyberpunk.
Solarpunk.
Yeah, sorry. Cyberpunk is the other one that is derived from. Well, thanks again for being with us, and looking forward to your talk.